I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh my mama. Oh my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys are going plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Rainin' Jay. Millie's.
Welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rainin' Jays, your daily Celtics podcast. I am your host, Samuel Jamison Packer III, a.k.a. Ladies Love Cool Jam, a.k.a. Young Baby Jamwich. And they tried to keep me down for a week. I haven't been on the airwaves when I'm back, baby. And the Celtics have swept the Indiana Pacers. And to talk about it with me from The Athletic, Jay King. So before we dive into the series, what we're going to talk about, we're going to
give an electric start, by the way.
Oh, thank you. We're going to give out our it's Taco Tuesday. This is the Tuesday podcast. We're going to give out our tacos for the series. We're going to talk about the electric Jay King Jam Packer basketball game that is going to happen at some point this week. But before we do all those things, we gotta. I have one main question for you, Jay. What the hell did we learn from that series?
Okay. That's a good place to start. I like that. We learned that the opening night starters can ride again.
And Erotic City's back, baby.
I think that's the most important part, right? Like from a standpoint of things that could matter. One, Gordon Hayward was good. They leaned on him in the fourth quarter of game four, and he was fantastic. His power, his strength continues to progress. And two, the moments when they played the opening night starters, they were really, really good. And it was kind of like how everybody thought they would be at the beginning of the season, with Kyrie drawing so much attention and other guys just crushing their matchups because they were forced into closeouts, and Tatum going to the hoop instead of pulling up for tons of mid-range jumpers, and Hayward making a big difference at both ends of the court, and Horford kicking butt when he wasn't going 4-for-19, and even when he was 4-for-19, helping out. So
Jaylen Brown making an impact and got to kind of return to his defensive self. Terry Rozier, doesn't have the points, but he still had a positive. Like, there's a lot of things to take away from the Celtics sweep that were great. And like with this Celtics team and how inconsistent they've been, like it would not have been shocked if they like lost one of those games in Indiana, like a game that they didn't necessarily need to win, but they took care of business. It's great to see them win in game four when Kyrie and Al are not firing on all cylinders. But like the biggest thing I have in my back of my head is it just that the Indiana Pacers are a dog shit team? Like, they were really not good. Like, Tyreke Evans was their best player in that series.
They're definitely not very good. Offensively, at least, they're not very good. Defensively, they're big, they're physical, they can get after you. But yeah, offensively, certainly not very good. However, Celtics haven't won four straight games since before the All-Star break. So to sweep the way they did it, I think was impressive. It was a mature series victory. So they fell behind sometimes. They were down double digits twice. They trailed in the fourth quarter of every game, and they just kind of did enough. Their defense was great. They rebounded the heck out of the basketball. They defended. Like, yes, the Pacers don't have Victor Oladipo, but the Celtics gave them nothing. And so they did what they were supposed to do. And I don't know what it means moving forward for the Bucks series. It's going to be a very, very different series, obviously. But
oh, I don't know, sir. The Pistons are making a comeback.
After the Rocky rocky regular season, to have just a mature, normal first round win, I think is a big deal for the Celtics and shows progress.
Okay, I'm going to try to not talk about the Bucks as much, just because that series is not going to start until next weekend. That means we have three episodes after this one to preview the Bucks. So I'm really going to try to focus on the Pacers. But what do you think is the biggest takeaway coming out of this series for the Celtics? I think you went with Erotic City. Is it Erotic City, or is it just the fact that Gordon Hayward is competent and aggressive?
And Kyrie and Al can kick ass. and that's like, even when the Celtics went through a lot of stuff, what held it up for them was, what the optimistic side of it was, always Kyrie and Al will give teams fits. And now Hayward's progressing, and now Tatum's going to the hoop, and now Jalen seems to be locked in and focused on defending first. And Terry Rozier was like Mr. Winning Plays during the first round. So there were a lot of positive signs for the Celtics. They're going to have to be a lot better against Milwaukee. They won't get away with some of the offensive droughts they had. They will need to.
Well, that gets to my second question, is what's the biggest, I guess, concern coming out of that Pacers series? Because I think you're right. It feels like the scoring droughts. There's still times where the offense just doesn't look good, and they go minutes without scoring, and they're not going to be playing an offensively inept team like the Milwaukee Bucks. And
they scored 77.3 points per 100 possessions when Al Horford was off the court. So yikes. Basketball without Al Horford is still a tough, tough thing to do for them. So they're going to need to change that. They're going to need to fix a lot of things. Horford's going to have a monster series against Milwaukee because of the way they defend the three-point arc. I thought one thing I didn't think they always handled well, and there was a one game when Kyrie went bonkers and kind of mutilated Pacers switches. I think the Celtics can get stagnant against switches at times, and I think that's been one of their issues all season. They're not a great isolation team, even though they seem to think they are. So that was one issue.
The Bucks feel like a pretty switch-heavy team with a lot of length.
Although
that could be a problem for them.
When Lopez is out there, they're not switching Lopez. And if they do, I think they'll probably get roasted for it. So I'm fascinated by that series. I think the Horford-Lopez matchup has been a matchup I've been looking forward to all season. I'm excited we'll get to see that one in the playoffs.
All right, here's a cockamamie theory that I heard Bill Simmons talking about on his podcast. Do you think the Celtics' success in this series is at all related to being down a player, being down Marcus Smart, and kind of having more of a fixed rotation where it's just eight guys who know what their roles are going to be, and like kind of having more comfort in just knowing like what that is, which is having eight guys? Do you think that was all, they all benefited from that?
I mean, it's hard to say. Is it because Marcus Smart isn't there? Is it because the playoffs arrived and the Celtics knew there was a sense of urgency? And I don't know. So it's hard for me to say with any sense of assuredness that that's right or wrong. I think in some ways the hierarchy seemed to make more sense once the playoffs arrived. Like Kyrie, big dose of Kyrie. Horford, big dose of Horford. Tatum, get him where you can get him. If you have a mismatch, if the team's not defending you right, go to the damn hoop, shoot threes, and then Hayward to make plays. And Hayward, I think his emergence is a huge deal. It's a huge deal, one, because he can push Kyrie off the ball. He can get in the paint. He's the one damn guy on the team who can draw free throws regularly when he's right. And two, he's good defensively. And if they do advance, obviously they have advanced, but if they'll go from Giannis to maybe Kawhi, maybe Ben Simmons, they'll need wings with size. And Hayward's there ready for what I think is a bigger role. I think they'll need to up his minutes against the Bucks. I think you need to play him. I think you need to play Al Horford at center. I think that's going to be a series where shooting and speed and size on the wing is all really important.
Well, let's have that. Before we go to the break, let's have that quick discussion about what the new starting lineup is. I saw you tweeting about this. Obviously, you're not going to start Aaron Baines against the Bucks because you want that Horford Brook Lopez matchup. Who do you think fills in for Baines? It sounds like you're leaning Gordon Hayward.
First of all, I do think Baines will come off the bench in that series.
Well, he still has to play a little bit. But he's only going to play like what, 12, 15 minutes a game.
I think Al Horford at center is a must against Brook Lopez, and I think you need size to replace. So it's either Hayward or Marcus Morris, probably. I guess you could say
Shemmy, no way they can go back to Mook. Now, John Corrales is going to be hyping the start Shemmy train, and he was doing it all last series. I just don't think it makes that much sense when you have a guy like Gordon Hayward.
Exactly. That's damn it, Packard. You took the point out of my mouth.
let's start this guy who's very strong but not very good, or let's start this max all-star player
who's also very strong. Also very strong.
Yeah, you don't think it like messes up like the rotations or like Hayward being, because Hayward kind of found a nice role of being like the primary ball handler when Kyrie's not on the court. But
yeah, but the Celtics,
I don't think that matters. Like,
they destroyed people when Hayward, Kyrie, and Horford shared the court in the first series. And obviously, it's going to be a different series. Obviously, you're going to want to run a lot through Kyrie and Horford. But to me, if Hayward is just, it's not time to overthink it. Hayward has proven that he's one of the Celtics' best players. He has the size they need. He could play against Giannis if they need him to. I kind of love the sticking him on Lopez and seeing how the Bucks adapt. Would the Bucks go to post-ups, which they've tried to avoid all season?
Ooh.
Would they punish him on the block? Lopez, like, for his size, he's not a great offensive rebounder. Not a great rebounder.
That feels like it totally changes everything the Bucks want to do if they're just playing through Brook Lopez on the post.
Yeah, so I kind of like that. And I was watching some of the film of the old Celtics-Bucks games from this season. And one of the games, it was a quirky game that ended up with a Celtics team meeting. So obviously things didn't go 100% well. But Horford was out, Marcus Morris was out, and the Celtics started Shemmy at the five and Hayward at the four. And Hayward was guarding Lopez, and Shemmy was guarding Giannis. And the Celtics got off to a lightning 10-1 start and used their speed. And Shemmy got he drove by Lopez on a closeout. He spotted up for a three over Lopez. And so I don't know whether you can get away with that for a full series. I do think it's something we'll see, at least in spurts. I don't know if the Celtics will start that way with Hayward on Lopez, but it's an interesting wrinkle if the Celtics do play it. I'm fascinated by this matchup. The Pacers series was so boring.
It was not great. But the Erotic City lineup is back, folks, and that's what's important. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, because we still have to, and it's a Taco Tuesday, we're going to hand out our tacos for the Pacers series, but I'm going to add a nice little wrinkle to make it more interesting. So tune into that after the break.
Ooh.
And we're back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. And we're handing out, it is a Taco Tuesday. And Jason Tatum, if you guys didn't see, he celebrated this sweep by throwing like 4.5 bags of Kraft cheese on some tacos. He ate some tacos. So we're handing out tacos in honor of Jason Tatum, Taco J. Now, normally we hand out tacos to the most deserving players. But it feels like with a four-game sweep, there's going to be a lot of different guys who kind of stepped up. You could give tacos. I mean, if John was on here, he'd give tacos to pretty much anyone who played a game. John's very free with tacos. I think it's the playoffs. We've got to limit this.
I'm a stingy taco giver.
Yeah, well, we need to be stingy, one, to make this segment a lot more interesting, and two, it's the playoffs. You can't these are playoff tacos. You can't just get it for playing your role. You have to play above your role. And so I'm saying only three tacos are given out. So it's like the top three stars in hockey. Who are – and it's kind of a – I mean, we know it's going to be Kyrie and Al, for the top two. So I'm going to say I'm going to take them off the board. They're already automatically got tacos. I'm changing the rules on the fly, as you can see.
We got.
I'm
going to say
I got wrinkles for days. I'm like an old person. Only two tacos. Kyrie and Al are obviously there. They're bread and butter. They're fantastic. They get the tacos. But who are your two guys who stepped up in the series and deserve to join them on that taco train?
Tatum, number one, because...
Give me your case.
Everything the Celtics have wanted from Tatum, he was in the first round. He got to the hoop. He picked up 12 free throw attempts in game four. He shot 50-something percent from the three-point arc. He shot more than 50% from the field. He declined to settle for too many mid-range jump shots. He was exactly what the Celtics wanted to get from him all season. And he was also flying around, guarding guys off screens, limiting the Pacers, granted limited wings. But Tatum, to me, earned that taco like a mug.
He was pretty solid on Bogdan, and you're right, the three-point shooting and the amount of times he got to the line. I think he earns it, but that being said, I think there are two other good candidates. So who would be your second guy? I'm leaning towards Jaylen Brown right now. I thought Jaylen Brown had a fantastic series despite his low scoring in games one and two. Game three, he really came out and shot the lights out of the ball, and I thought like provided the offense a much-needed spark, especially in that first quarter in game three. But then on the other hand, we have Gordon Hayward. We've been talking all this whole episode about Gordon Hayward. Who do you think is more deserving between the two of those guys? Or do you go wild card Mook scoring 20 points in games one and game four?
Yeah, I thought Mook kind of steadied the Celtics in game one when they needed him to. And then the three he hit in game four was overlooked because of what Gordon Hayward did after that. But they were up one. They were struggling. And huge shot for them when it happened. So Mook was really good. I wouldn't put him. I do think he was big. I thought he did a great job on the glass, too. The Celtics, you know what their rebound rate was without Aaron Baines on the court?
I do not. I bet you do.
Usually their rebound rate sucks without Aaron Baines on the court. 56.6. And that's against a tough physical Pacers team.
That's against a team with Thad Young on it.
They kicked butt on the glass. They just roasted dudes on the glass. And Mook, you know, Mook was big on that.
You know who doesn't get a taco is Thad Young, man. For Thad Young Hive, this was a disappointing series. That guy didn't do shit.
Yeah. As I said, I just wish he was a little better shooter. If he was just a little better shooter, there was one game he started launching. And that was fun. Because
he was chucking.
Yeah, you could tell coaches were like, Thad, we need you to just let it fly, man. And then he missed him, and he was like, Coach, that ain't me yet. The 3A and Emmy no mo. But
did we settle on the second taco, though? Are you giving it to Mook?
We have no. I declared Mook out of the running.
Okay. We gave him an honorable mention. So it's between Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward.
Yes. I'm gonna go with Hayward because of the narrative.
He's a savvy media member.
The narrative is...
He scored 6 points in game three.
How many did Jaylen score in game one and two?
Averaged four roasted. Points a game. Boom, yeah, but Jaylen has a better narrative because he's arcing up.
No, but to me, a year ago, Hayward was literally rehabbing in Indy when the Celtics started the playoffs. Like, he was in the same city and working on rehab diligently. And then a year later, he comes back and dominates the fourth quarter of a sweep. That's taco worthy.
That's fair. The narrative thing, being in the same city, Al Horford saying, let's go, Butler, which doesn't really make any sense, but I'm here for it. All right. I mean, I'll give it to Gordon Hayward. I do think Jaylen Brown deserves some credit, some due for just being able to be consistent from three. And I mean, in that pass that Brad won't stop talking about.
And that was a great pass. That was a huge pass for them too. So yeah. And Jaylen too, I think he's accepted that when he's starting, he's not going to get many touches. His usage rate in the first round was 15.5. And he's still staying locked in defensively. When he was out in the fourth quarter of game four, when they put Mook in instead. He's over there sweeping on the sidelines, just living it up. So Jalen deserved a taco too, but you put artificial constraints. And
we got wrinkles.
Yeah, we got wrinkles, bro.
Here's the thing about Jalen. He's not going to get a taco because of his miming of a broom. It's clear that he's never swept anything in his life. He just doesn't know how to broom.
Well, he hadn't. It was his first sweep.
That's fair.
Al Horford's first sweep, too. First sweep on the good side.
Kyrie Irving has never lost a first-round playoff game.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. That really is nuts.
Like, just he's insane. It's kind of
playoffs. He loves the playoffs more than anyone, man.
He does. He will wax poetic about it.
He waxes poetic about just the mental challenge of it. He just lives for it. He lives for it. And to what he's saying, it was kind of a mental series. And every series is a mental series. But the Pacers tried everything on him. They switched on him, and he roasted switches, especially in game two, when the Celtics needed it. They doubled him, and he gave the ball up. And let other guys do the damage. I thought he defended at a high level. He was locked in on that end. The one behind the back pass he had late in game four after saving it was silly. He didn't shoot well at all in game four, but I thought he had a really nice series too. And the way he handles a game and the way he can help them get a good shot on every possession. When he and Al Horford and to an extent now Hayward are involved, I think is a really big deal for them. And you saw it late in games. The Celtics just had so many options depending on because of how many good players they have, and that's where their depth shows up. Like Bogdanović, the Pacers are switching, and he's having all sorts of trouble staying with Kyrie, so the Celtics throw 1-3 pick and roll, and Jason Tatum goes and gets him, and it goes and gets Kyrie, and they either force a switch on Bogdan, or two guys are going toward Kyrie, and Tatum's open, and that's how the Celtics helped dig out game two. I just thought it was a really smart series that they played, and it was obvious that they just had a lot more options than the Pacers did. Pacers were very limited.
Very limited, which is again comes back to the question is maybe the Pacers just suck. But I think I like about Kyrie, and as a lot has been made about his leadership skills and things like that, I just thought he was very solid. I just like the quotes coming out of game three where he was immediately like, the hardest game is game four. Like he comes from LeBron's school of flipping the switch, and like we talked about him kind of he loves the intensity of the playoffs, but I don't think it's any like surprise that the lackadaisical Celtics came in kind of laser focused in this series, and because Kyrie has flipped the switch, and so if he's gonna kind of go through all this ups and downs of the regular season just to turn it on the playoffs, then that's all that matters. So he gets a taco. Pretty much, we had constraints, and then we talked about every single player on the roster other than Terry Rozier, who probably is the most deserving of the most deserving of the taco because he outperformed expectations more than anyone.
He was really good too, and playoff Terry, man, it's scary Terry now.
The guy's just a winner. The guy just plays big in big moments, and that's what you like to see. Knocks down shots, Tito three sticks for the win. All right, we've talked enough about the Pacers series. We're going to talk about a much more serious and a much more important basketball game. That's right, Jam versus Jay, coming up after the break, and we're back on the Locked On Celtics podcast with the reigning Jays. Now, last week or a couple weeks ago, Jay and I were supposed to play an epic game of one-on-one. There's been a lot of talk over the years. Jay King, this famous college athlete from Western Mass, one of the greatest basketball players the state has ever seen, and me, Jam Packer, the lowly underdog, only 5'6" until he was 18 years old, is just a underdog just trying to throw one big punch and knock him out. But it got rained out, and so that game will happen at some point this week. Jay, I haven't told you this, but we're going to play some point this week because we have a lot of stuff to do until the series actually starts. And so I just wanted to get first hear your thoughts on what the games were, but I want to talk ground rules. Like, what are we playing to? Ones and twos, twos and threes? What's this? How many games are we playing? So let me hear your thoughts.
What kind of lunatic plays twos and threes in one-on-one, bro?
That's how you properly apportion the 3 points to 2 point ratio. And so there's the 3 point shot is 1 point one and a half times the value of the 2 point shot.
I play in real life where
give me your rules, bro.
One-on-one is ones and twos, man.
All right, what's the game to?
The game, let's play game 21.
Game 21, how many games?
That long of a game will favor you. Because
that's what I need.
You're in better shape than I am.
That's fair, but you also grew up playing basketball. I did not. But how confident are you going into this game?
I mean, there's no chance I'm losing. Literally zero chance.
All right.
The only way I lose is if I'm like Blake Griffin and I just my knee just does not allow me to have any lift whatsoever.
Okay, so say if the listener gods out there wanted to place a wager on the game, what would you say the opening line is?
It's like me minus 900,000.
That doesn't even make sense, bro. Yeah, give me a line on the game. How many points do you think I would get to make it a fair game? Because I think I'm going to win straight up. You're an old man. You got no knees. You've been rehabbing for days.
Let's give it a 3.5 point spread.
3.5 point spread. Ooh, that's spicy.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that's going to happen. You guys are going to. Where are we going to play though?
Who's going to be our bookie?
John Corrales is the bookie. Also video coordinator, also referee.
I might have to throw the game.
Jay King in on the fix. Like shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right. I think I'm gonna try and play on the blacktops because that will be hurt your old man knees. But it's on like Donkey Kong. My only strategy is just to be like you're going to be Kevin Durant and I'm going to be Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, well, we've seen how that goes.
Yeah, but I might get you teed up. Thrown out of game one.
Yeah, if I get ejected, that's another way you might win.
All right, so everyone, look out. Follow Locked On Celtics on Instagram. John Corrales, hopefully, will be live streaming that. It will be a battle for the ages. I'm the underdog. Everyone should be rooting for me. No one likes the kid. Jam Packer, Young Baby Jamwich is the pick in that game. Take the points. I would say take me to win if you want to make some real money. This has been a shorter segment than I thought it was going to be. So, Jay, I'm going to ask you for any other observations from the first round of the NBA playoffs.
The Bucks still look great. The Raptors and Sixers are taking care of things. Second round of the East is going to be fun as hell, entertaining as a mug, and Golden State's still the best team in the league.
Oh, but they did give up 31-point lead to the Clippers, and the Rockets are playing fantastic basketball right now. Do you think the Rockets have a chance to upset them?
I mean, a chance? Sure. Like Lloyd Christmas had a chance with that married woman in Dumb and Dumber named Mary Swanson.
Ooh, nice pull.
Yeah, it was almost said Samsonite.
Mary Samsonite?
Well, he was looking at the luggage, right? Wasn't that what he first thought her name was? Yeah.
I don't. Yeah, that sounds about right.
And so, yeah, I think they've got the Lloyd Christmas chance. I think the Warriors are playing as good basketball as they've played in the last couple of years. And I think they're ready to shut up everyone who thinks the Rockets have a chance against them.
All right, last question before we go. What did you think about the Ben Simmons, Jared Dudley beef?
Oh, give it to me. Feed it to me. Oh, that is the greatest beef these eyes have seen since at least Celtics Wizards.
Simmons is such a punk. Jared Dudley was just like very accurate in what he was saying. He's like, Ben Simmons is an elite player in transition and he's average in half court. And then for like Sixers fans to get on their high horse and be like, oh, Ben Simmons is much better than Jared Dudley. Well, yeah, Jared Dudley would tell you that. Jared Dudley, one of my favorite guys in the league. I just I love that he got ejected from that game. I love that he was playing the exact savvy vet role. Shame on the Nets for not winning game three where Embiid doesn't play, and then a game four where Butler gets ejected. They really had a chance to kind of steal that
Dudley
series.
Dudley got ejected too. Dudley's a big piece of what they do.
I know, but they have so many. Like, he's not as big as Jimmy Butler.
Jared Dudley. Don't slander Jared Dudley on my podcast.
I'm not slandering Jared Dudley.
When he was taunting Simmons with his arms out wide, I was in my hotel room in Indy, legitimately screaming by myself, like just living for the moment. It was one of the greatest things these eyes have seen. When a beef pops up that's so unexpected and so rare, and between like a 12-year journeyman solid player versus a young all-star who, like, it was just fantastic. It touched all the boxes for me. It was incredible.
All right, that's going to wrap it up. I'm going to leave you guys with that image. Jay King alone in a hotel room in Philadelphia screaming at the television just because there's some playoff beef between Jared Dudley and Ben Simmons. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you are a listener, please subscribe, rate, review us 5 stars. You can listen to us on your car stereo. You can be like, hey, Alexa, play podcast Locked On Celtics. There's a Himalaya app you can listen to us on, or just anywhere that you get podcasts. However you got podcasts, this podcast, just do that again repeatedly. Give us a 5-star review. We are the Daily Celtics Podcast. We are the best Celtics podcast. We got takes for days. We got insight. We have 2 legitimate newspapermen reporting on the beat. I get to a media credential for God knows what reason. But we're fantastic. Please listen. And thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.